This is the Web Weekly for August 20th, 2010. Episode 5, Topics Galore. In this week's episode, Kevin and Jonas talk about Google, random tech stuff, Facebook Places, simplicity versus choice, and we decide whether or not the web is dead. You're listening to the Web Weekly, the podcast for all things web. I'm Kevin Dees, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Jonas Flint. How are you doing today, Jonas?
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Doing all right. Been an interesting week. Had to go through about 900 news feeds.
Yeah, well,
for today's show, so I kind of fell behind a little bit, and I caught back up. Some of the news was older, but I just kind of sorted through it, scanned through the headlines, that kind of thing. But I think we have some really good content for today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we sure fill up our agenda full of hot topics, so that's awesome.
Yeah, we got a lot of good things on the slate today. Hopefully, folks will stay tuned in and
today,
listen to what we got.
Today, I got to tell you, you're going to be carrying the podcast.
Well,
because I am absolutely, I think I've gotten maybe 16 hours of sleep this week. No, I mean, it's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I've been working like crazy, so I'm dragging and...
Yeah. But you showed me your business cards. That was kind of nice. So
yeah.
you finally got yours.
Yeah, they cut them a little too round. I have all four corners cut round.
I don't know what I think about cars that do that. Like, I wouldn't personally do it, but if you have... Like, your logo's around, so it works, you know.
Yeah,
so the round corners work, so it kind of, as far as the design goes, it kind of, the feel of it works well.
Well, I had my last card, I mean, these are the same cards reprinted and cut, and with the last printer, they had a different radius of the cut.
Okay.
You know, so this is like more of a rounded cut, so I'm just still kind of getting used to it, but
right.
Whatever, I ordered 1,000 of them, I'm going to blitz them out to folks. You know, business cards are... dispensable things, so
right,
you know. So I finally got those set up, and I've just been working on some Drupal sites. What have you been working on this week?
Oh, a little bit of everything. I've been working on, let's see, some WordPress stuff.
Nice.
I've also kept fairly busy doing a few mock-ups and wireframes, that kind of thing. So things are continuing to go forward, and I've been doing a lot of networking. So all the normal things that are found in a business week. But
so are you still? What are you using for your mockups now, or your wireframes? Are you still using Mockingbird?
You know, it was out of beta the 15th of August, right? So it's only been about 5 days. I haven't really messed with it since it went out of beta.
You know, are you gonna pull out your wallet with a hot wad of cash and pay for Mockingbird, or are you gonna?
I'm actually thinking I'm just gonna build some templated little. What do they call them in Illustrator? You have these little like widget kind of things that you can build, and you can throw those in Illustrator, and then you can take them and resize those. So I'll probably go for that approach.
Yeah.
Now I'll just use Illustrator. It's a little bit more complicated, and there's more stuff around it. But I'll end up probably using Illustrator for mockups again. So.
That's what you were doing before.
Yeah.
I'll find a tool. Like, there's several wireframing tools out there.
Wireframe, not mockup. I said mockups.
Yeah. Well, I mean, same difference. That's what they're for. They mock up your wireframes or whatever. iPlots was a real good one. iPlotz. That one actually has an Adobe Air application and a web application, and it's pretty reasonable. I'm thinking about going in with a couple guys, and you know, they have like a 5 license version where, and I've already contacted them, and I said, hey, can I go in with a bunch of guys, and you know, we can each share a license, and they're like, yeah, that's cool. You know, I guess
yeah,
as long as they make their money, they don't really care. So
yeah, so as long as it's in the user agreement and the license agreement, then you're fine. But
yeah, I was loving Mockingbird when it was free, though, and now, you know, they had to turn around and try to make money on this, man. Shame on them.
Yeah.
Shame on them for trying to make money. Right?
Have you heard of this Google's basically doing this online app store, the Chrome store. You know, I wonder if they'd have a wireframing tool in that. And they're making, they're supposedly coming out with this Google movie. And what do you think about all this? They're not the Chrome web app store, I believe is what it's called.
Well, I'm thinking that was a brilliant segue into the topic, Kevin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What am I here for? It's called the Chrome Web Store.
Like a velvet hammer.
So, yeah, yeah. They say it's set up for October launch, so not too far away. And they're only taking 5% cut of revenue versus the 30% previously talked about. Sort of like the iPad store and all that. Apple takes quite a big cut. So since they're going for the web, they're hoping by lowering this revenue that they come in, a lot of developers. Bleh,
and you said
developers
they have a,
will come in.
You said they have a wireframe tool in there.
Well, maybe they might. They might come out with one. That's what I'm hoping this store will do. Is it'll provide basically web apps that you can do a one-time payment on, or however it's set up. I'm guessing it's a one-time payment since they're doing a revenue 5% model off of it. So
right.
I'm assuming you buy a license for the app and then you're good to go.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how well the store will do. Google's going to take only a 5% cut, so that's good for developers. But you know, we're already using web apps for free.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious as to how it will work. And
yeah. It'll be interesting because a lot of web stuff has been leaning towards software as a service. You know, like Basecamp and all these other ones where you pay a monthly fee. And then this Google thing's kind of like web software as basically software. And with people constantly hitting your server, it just to me, doesn't sound sustainable to sell an app unless it's like a native thing where you download a bunch of JavaScript files that you can run through a desktop.
So is that the benefit for developers? I mean, what is the benefit for developers? Is it the distribution? Is it
the fact that the distribution for sure. I mean, there's no point to put your anything in an app unless it's going to help get your application out to other folks.
Okay, and how will that work? Will you be hosting that app on your own server?
That's a good question. I don't know. I haven't looked into it enough to really see, but I figured I'd mention the store just so people have a heads up on what's coming. But it'll be worth giving a look into. And then on top of this Google App Store, like I said, Google may be doing a Google movie. And it's based off of Google, The End of the World as We Know It.
Yeah.
I actually bought that book and read it. And to be honest, I got, you know, you get, it's one of those slow reads where it's so jam-packed full of so much information, it's really hard to speed read through it. But that was a good book. So if Google comes out with a movie, we'll see. I don't know that it would be as dramatic as the Facebook movie because there wasn't as much going on. I won't say it's much going on around Google because, I mean, the books that they did was a big deal. I mean, people got mad about that in the YouTube. Folks got mad about that, and the newspaper industry, you know, was really on to Google for the Google News. So it'll be interesting to see how the drama plays out if they do a movie versus
pretty,
what Facebook has with.
Well, I find it pretty interesting that these people that would have probably been considered nerds, you know, are starting to really get the spotlight as far as Hollywood is concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like the tech industry or the web industry is starting to get a bit Hollywooded.
Yeah. You know,
I find that pretty interesting.
Do you
that,
feel like this Google movie is just Google trying to, or someone in Hollywood trying to ride the coattails of this Facebook movie?
I don't know. I mean,
and I wonder when they started talking about this. Was it before or after? You know,
I haven't done any reading about it, you know. I just,
well, just your
maybe,
opinion.
Maybe,
what does it look like from
the
outside looking in?
Well, I think a director will choose to follow a story that he's interested in, you know.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the Google story really is pretty interesting. Yeah, I don't. You know, I think the Facebook story is really, really interesting as far as, you know, the juice.
Right.
And the dirt that went on, you know, with Zuckerberg and the lawsuits and, you know, I'm not sure how interesting, you know, a Google movie will be, you know, as far as their personal lives. You know, Zuckerberg has a lot, I mean, there's a lot of controversial issues with, you know, the starting of Facebook, you know, the fact that he stole the web. You know,
yeah, all these privacy concerns even now.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the new privacy stuff later on in the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so, the location base, but we want to save that for later. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting.
We'll see.
Interesting
you
little
know, I'll watch
spree
it.
Of movies. Yeah.
You know, I'll watch it. I plan on seeing the Facebook movie. The Facebook looks a lot better in the trailer now that, you know,
yeah.
The trailer's out. It does look, you know, really. Really interesting. You know, it's hard to say, you know, how much, you know, drama is added to these movies. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
they're probably not
entirely
accurate.
Right.
You know, they're Hollywooded up. But, you know, it'll be interesting. You know, at least it'll give us
some entertainment
value. You know, I mean, I'll watch it. I'm a web guy. You know, I like Google and I like Facebook, so I'll watch it.
So. Up next, I guess, we want to cover, and I guess we should do this kind of segment as kind of a lightning round, because we have a lot of new little technology blog posts covering from HTML to basically web fonts to source code management from Git.
Yeah,
you want to do
like
kind of a lightning round here, or kind of just go over each one briefly? I mean, we got quite a few up there.
Yeah, well, let's see what you have. You have HTML5, Reset, jQuery, Mobile, CSS3
media queries,
and then Adobe on Typekit. That's pretty cool. That's pretty interesting. Well, HTML5 Reset. Kevin, give us the lightning round of what HTML5 Reset is.
Well, this HTML Reset is actually a little bit of old news. I saw it on Jeffrey Zelman's post that he made when I was going through the old news. And he did that on like August 11th. He posted about this, and it's a nice little tool, and we'll throw a link up on the website. And it essentially is, if you've ever used the HTML reset that Andy Clark did, you can check this new one out, and it does it for like HTML5, and they have different packages, like a really minimized. They have what, three packages. I minimized one to a higher level one, and it covers a lot of things. You definitely need to check it out. I think it even includes some things with JavaScript files in there and some CSS3 stuff. So, but it's definitely worth a look.
Yeah, I've taken a peek at it. I did a little bit of reading. I like the way it has, you know, your downloadable files, and then it explains, you know, this is actually how you use it. And it even gives you a suggested directory structure. You know, I think it's a great primer for a new person entering into HTML5.
Right.
I think it's great. It's just a code set that you can use to quickly implement in your next project. You know.
Right. And that can be found at HTML5reset.org. I thought it was going to be a longer URL than that, but it's short, so we'll go ahead and throw that in. Then up next, you found this thing, jQuery Mobile.
What's this about? I think it's awesome. jQuery Mobile. It's basically a set of widgets, and I believe it's a framework. That's what it is. jQuery framework specifically for mobile applications.
Right, like the iPad, and I think this even covers like Blackberries and everything. So this isn't like the JQ Touch that they came out with specifically for the iPhone. This is for all the devices, and this is being done by John Resig, right, the actual creator of jQuery. So this is a real core jQuery project that you should check out.
Yeah, it actually has some really interesting things, you know, support, you know, it's specifically a framework designed for touch, you know.
Not just touch devices, though. This is for, this is what it says. The jQuery project is really excited to announce the work that we have been doing to bring jQuery to mobile devices. Not only is the jQuery core library being improved at work across all of the major mobile platforms. All of the mobile platforms. So that basically says not just touch.
Well, most mobile platforms.
Right, you can't really say all, but it's definitely a thing to check out and go look at it. And you can find this at jQueryMobile.com.
But there are a lot of like actual, you know, widgets that that are specifically for.
Right.
You know, for touch optimization.
Yeah, on the homepage they have iPhone iOS, Android, BlackBerry, Palm Web OS, Windows Phone, so it covers a lot of these.
Yeah, touch optimized layouts and UI widgets. So it's a set of widgets that that are specifically optimized for your next mobile project. I'm really actually excited about it. It allows us to have some tools that will enable us to be able to develop for mobile quickly. You know, in fact, you know.
And here's a good question to ask here before we close up this thing is, with these jQuery things, PageWait is a big thing when it comes to mobile devices. And if we're using these frameworks, it's going to add an extra load of PageWait. So is the benefit to it? The real question for this framework, whether we're going to use it or not, is this framework going to benefit our users enough to justify the page weight that they come with?
Well, who knows?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff in here.
Yeah, they haven't launched all of the widgets yet, but I mean, I think it'll be a viable option for people that are developing and that are looking to develop a mobile application. So let's see. You can do some reading up on it. I'm looking forward to seeing it. So I was excited when I read it.
Yeah. Then we have also CSS3 media queries. This blog post can be found on the webdesignerwall.com. And he basically goes through and talks about how to use media queries. And if you don't know what media queries are, they're basically, if you were, say, creating a print style sheet or a print style sheet, you would use a media query to say, hey, this is the device. But these media queries in CSS3 have been advanced even more to where you can say, if it's a print style and that print, or print's probably not a good example, but let's say you're using a screen and you want to show a certain style sheet if the screen is, say, less than 480 pixels wide, which is, I think is the iPhone width. You can use these media queries to create different styles for different screen widths. A lot of sites have been doing it, he points out. Simon Collison's website, John Hicks's website. I mean, there's a few of them on there that you want to check out. Really nice. And this is all based on the article that Ethan Marcotte did for the Elistapart. So definitely worth a look if you're wanting to check out some really advanced stuff that can be useful, and the media queries work in the browser for the iPhone, Safari Mobile. So all this stuff can be used for more advanced browsers, but not necessarily older browsers. So definitely worth a look.
Awesome.
Then we have Git, and I had been looking into Git, and I started using it, and you wanted me to kind of help you out. Yeah, I'll just point you towards it. I found this little article I figured I'd load up here called Git for the Lazy. Now, Git is basically a source control tool, version control. So you kind of have the ability with Git to manage and version your software as you work. So if you mess up, you can change it back. But this resource gives you basically instructions on how to do a lot of things. It's a wiki. And so it's definitely worth a look. We'll have to throw a link up to that. It's kind of a
Git for the Lazy. Now,
Git for the Lazy, yeah.
I'm having what is it? A documentation that makes you or allows you to easily install Git, or what?
It's kind of a wiki for people who don't know Git quite yet, and they're looking just to do a few things like install Git or use Git, just the simple functionalities. It's kind of like a compilation of different articles and that kind of thing to show you how to do this.
So it's kind of like a quick pocket guide.
Right, kind of. Yeah.
Like a Git pocket guy. Well, that's pretty interesting. Right. So, I don't know. I don't haven't used Git. I have used Subversion. And I'm interested in learning how to use Git because there's a lot of talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard a lot of people mention how good it is. So that's great.
Yep. And then we have on the last item on kind of the lightning list here is Adobe comes to Typekit. And you know I like Typekit.
Yeah.
And obviously we like Adobe stuff. And so Adobe is giving
Adobe fonts are coming to Typekit.
Right. So that's
like the Garamond font.
Right. That's kind of huge.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Adobe has beautiful fonts. I mean, in fact, I just used it on a print project myself. Or used the Adobe Garamond font. So it'd be great to use that on the web. So that's great that Typekit is expanding themselves a little bit. I haven't bought into Typekit yet. I plan to, because I think it's great for like block level
things. Right. They've really dropped their prices and what you really get out of Typekit since it was in beta. I was in there from early beta, and you know it was really nice. I've tried other ones. I've tried FontDeck. You know that was okay. I got a beta card from Richard Rutter from that. That was kind of nice to check that out. You know, but I'm kind of attached to the Typekit deal. They have a lot more fonts in there. And, it, you know, competitors will definitely have a shot once more and more people start hooking into these things. So definitely interesting link to check out. And that's on the Typekit blog. You can probably find it there.
So do you have a place to be soon?
A place to be soon?
Yeah. I mean, what's your schedule looking like? Are you in a rush?
Oh, no, I'm not.
Okay. I was about to say, calm down, Sparky. You seem like you're in a rush.
Well, that was the lightning round. We're supposed to go fast. Okay. Lightning. Chop, chop, chop. Because we still have a lot to cover. We still have, basically what's up next is this geolocation.
Nowhere you need to be.
No.
Okay, you see that segue?
Geolocation?
You like that, didn't you?
Gotcha, yeah. Oh man!
Anyway, Facebook,
I didn't see
Facebook,
where you were going with that.
Facebook Places, right?
Facebook Places,
awesome.
All right, so well, you know what Facebook? What is Facebook Places?
I did a little bit of reading on it. I looked around on Facebook and I couldn't find it anywhere. I've updated. You have an iPhone, right?
Yeah, I have an iPhone.
I updated my iPhone app that has support for Places, but if you look on the Places spot, it hasn't been implemented Places yet on the Facebook app. But,
yeah, there's a little controversy there because I looked through Twitter, I like watch some updates, see what people are thinking about Facebook Places, and there's a little bug in there, like you have to sign out and sign back in or something funky to get Places to work on the app. But I think I did see this.
You mean on the
Facebook
iPhone app?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
It's there's little tweaks that you have to do to get it to work. I'm sure they'll work those out in an update or so. But
so essentially, you know, what it allows you to do is tag or check into a location that you're at,
and you can tag people, which I think is controversial. But we'll get to that later. Jumping ahead here.
Okay,
but
basically, what Places allows you to do is check in, just like Owala and Foursquare,
right.
and let people know, you know, your location so that your friends on Facebook could know where you're at the time. Basically, we'll be able to stalk each other.
Right, and you know, Twitter has done this geolocation thing as well, and that was a long time ago, and you know, I don't see many people using that a whole lot. I used it for a little while, but it's kind of like, well, you know, I kind of like the reward system of Gowalla. I've been using Gowalla. I use Foursquare some. I check in whenever I go somewhere with Foursquare just to see who's around. And in Facebook Places integrates with these things. So supposedly when you check in with Foursquare wallet, it updates
your Facebook also.
Right.
Everybody knows where you're at. Now, how do you feel about that, Kevin? Do you feel comfortable with everybody knowing where you're at?
Okay, here's my perspective on this.
We know you're a secretive, shady bastard, so why?
Yeah.
Does that make you a little bit nervous? No, I'm just kidding. Kevin is neither secretive nor shady. So.
Right, yeah, unless I haven't shaved in the morning, then I kind of have that 5 o'clock shadow.
Right, he might be a bit of a bastard, but he's not secretive or shady. No,
okay. Punch you in the face here in a second.
Right.
All right, so my view on the whole location thing is, if you're going to, say, a meetup, you probably want to check in so you can see who's there and let other people know you're there to kind of encourage people if they're thinking about going, hey, Kevin's here, let me go here. So if I go to, say, Wild Wings or Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria, you know.
They know where you're at so right. that they can probably have
lunch.
Yeah,
so they can drop by and say, hey, Kevin's here, I'll go say hey to him.
So what about the ugly chick that really, really likes you?
And wants
to check in at the restaurant and so that she can sit next to you and whisper sweet nothings in your ear.
Right. Well,
how do you feel about that
person, and then you also have the people, like, when you check in, people know you're not home, you know? And so you have this security issue that you run into.
Yeah.
And that they've actually, there have been a lot of sites, I think, pleaserobme.com or something like that, and there was another one. That I actually saw on Dribbble. It was like a mock-up site. Really, really nicely designed. But it was kind of telling people about the security implications that you run into when you check into these places, because you're telling the world where you aren't at. Not only where you are at, but where you aren't at. So that, you know, you have to be careful in how you use these things.
Well, you know, and if someone is savvy enough, or if somebody has plans to rob you,
Right.
They're going to get to your stuff eventually anyway.
Right.
You know, if they're really out to get you and rob you. Now, I have heard of a case. In fact, I'm not going to mention a location, but, you know, the person had a bunch of band equipment in their van. And basically said where they were at, and their car was robbed. You know, in that case, okay.
Right,
you
know, so
I could see the argument, but I don't think that...
Yeah, folks need to be aware of the implications behind these new technologies, really. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And then the privacy concerns behind this, like people being able to tag you, for one, this Facebook thing.
You know, you can...
You can always disable this on Facebook.
Right. In fact, privacy settings that are available.
Right. I have a link on here somewhere, and I'll put it on the show notes, of how to actually disable your Facebook privacy settings so you can turn this off. But the thing I don't like is people being able to tag me into a location. So even if I'm not there, supposedly they're supposed to be able to check me in, but this could be a contradiction, because with the actual app, the places for Facebook, you have to be in the vicinity to actually check in. So this is a lot like Gowalla versus Foursquare, or in Gowalla, you actually have to be at the place to check in, and in Foursquare, you don't.
Right. So Kevin, are you saying you actually really weren't in that nudie bar that you checked in at?
Right, that was my friend who tagged me.
Right.
No. But, right. You know, these security...
I understand what you're saying. I think this
is a hit against Facebook to be doing this tagging thing, because if they tag you, it's shared with their friends, and it's not just shared with your network.
Yeah, it can be concerning. It can. I'm personally a private person. I don't. Right. I don't generally... I mean, I've used Foursquare and Gowalla, and, you know, but... I'm pretty mild in my usage of a lot of the social media, other than for private use. Like, I like to keep updated with my friends and people that I personally know, even business associates. But if I don't, I'm not one of these people that will accept a friend request from a total stranger. I personally just see really no usage or point to that.
Right.
Twitter, I'll post very, very rarely, and maybe I should be better at this, but I use it more as a water cooling, you know. I don't feel self-indulged enough to be able to tell everybody what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And I don't know, or check in. I mean, I've used Gowalla, Foursquare, and it was pretty cool, you know.
Yeah,
try to be the mayor of something, but...
Right.
Again, it quickly died with me. I mean, I didn't really...
I think the whole location thing is very interesting. And for Facebook, it's early. I can't really say, hey, this thing is going to be, you know, a sinking ship. But you know, we just have to wait to find out. I think they're going to have to work out these security, the privacy concerns, because they keep running into the same wall over and over again, you know, and it's like, come on, Facebook, think about this.
But if it's going to be successful anywhere, it is going to be successful on Facebook because of the sheer volume of people that's on it. And
it has been successful.
And how people are using Facebook as far as their friends. And aren't you really interested where your friends are at the time? Think about it.
You know,
look where Kevin's at. Oh, okay. He's there right now.
I'm not going to answer that question because I haven't really thought about it much. You know, I do, like I said, I do use Gowalla. Usually I open up these things when I'm out and about and saying, hey, I'm in downtown. Let me check out and see where people are at, see where stuff's happening. You know, and that's how I'll use it.
And that's how I use it to find, you know, if Kevin Dees is at Uncle Berto's Burritos, and I really want Mexican, and I'm like, well, Kevin's try that out. I do like it as far as the recommendational power that it has, you know. But I can see the concern for privacy, and I can also see the benefits of its usage and how people will like it. If it's going to be successful, it'll be successful on Facebook. I'm pretty sure it will be successful on Facebook, in fact. That's my prediction. You think it won't be?
No, well, see, there has been some success from it because actually Foursquare, the people that are using Foursquare now, has actually launched really high up now since this has been introduced to Facebook. So we'll see if this is just... you know, just a shedding coming off of the launch. We'll see. You know, it's going to take a little bit more time to really investigate this with more information. We really just need more data.
Who will really use it, too? You know, will normal folk use it? You know, Facebook, the benefit of Facebook lately has been, or the success of Facebook relied on the fact that your grandma and your sister and your cousin and these less tech-savvy social media users have been able to use it. But do they really use something like geolocation? Will my wife use geolocation? Will your, you know, whoever it is that you...
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a really big question mark right now.
Will your mom use geolocation? That's the question.
It's a question mark over this right now. And the privacy concerns around it are going to help shape that. But what... You know, that kind of covers Facebook, you know. We'll see from there. But what do we have up next? What's the next on the
So ladder? You have an article that, or no, I think this is more of a video.
It's a video and an article because Paul Bowag and Joel Spolsky kind of talked about the same. They kind of cropped up around the same time.
Simplicity versus choice.
Yeah, simplicity versus choice.
Okay.
And this has a lot to do with... You know, if you read these two articles, and we'll put them up on there, BoagWorld.com and I think JoelOnSoftware.com or something like that. If you go to these things, I'll have those posts up there, but they talk about basically how more selection actually creates less revenue. But still at the same time, more functionality produces more sales. Like the example that Joel gave was they have sampler cups. And a ton of people sampled these things, but few bought because for various reasons.
There was a ton of selection.
What Paul calls it is choice paralysis. And it was funny because both of these articles talk about this jelly experiment. But, you know, definitely two cool things to check out. And what really I think it comes down to is, you know, there's a lot of talk about being simple. But there's being simple... And there's also this being sort of like an invisible design. And Mark Bolton's actually supposed to be coming out with a book from his Five Simple Steps on the issue. But for an example, Amazon, right? You know, their one-click button, right? And that seems that they took a lot of stuff away, but actually all those same things are still there. When you click the button, your thing's still added to a cart, you know, and if you push more buttons, it queues them up, so you're not sending a bunch of shipping things. But it's sort of like an invisible design. So instead of you actually physically going, putting it in the cart, and clicking checkout, and putting in your shipping address, it does all that automatically for you. And so it's kind of hidden functionality that's there. Well, so they haven't taken anything away. They've just taken interaction away. What absorbs your eye and what absorbs into your mind of what you have to do. And it's patented. It's a patented idea. They're one click buy button kind of thing.
Right. Well, there's a quote. It's simplicity is the ultimate sophistication.
Right.
Simplicity. When you said earlier, you know, there's simplicity and then there's, you know, invisible design. Well, simplicity is a part of invisible design.
Right. But what I'm trying to say here is some folks are going to take this choice versus selection idea and form it into something that it's not and think, well, I just need to take away all these features and I just need to get rid of all this cool stuff, where it may be that a lot of these features just need to be integrated together, like PB&J, you know.
Well,
you can take two simple things and combine them making something great, and then you're left with one product.
Well, they just need to be able to, it's about presentation. And the choices need to be presented in a simple manner that's easy and good for usability. You know, there is a power in you know, narrowing your choices.
Right.
You know,
37 signals, huge success.
It does have
practice.
Yeah, it does
simplicity.
It does have a proven success rate. That's because with fewer options, you're able to design. Yeah, that's easier on design implementation, right?
Right.
So, but the person that can take a bunch of complexities and a bunch of options and create an interface, you know, in an interactive mode that allows the user to very simply get to what they need,
right,
and sift out these complexities very easily, you know. Yeah, you know, more.
Right.
Yeah, you have the best of both worlds, right? You have the options, and you have the you know, you have the options and the choice, but you also have the ease of use.
Right.
That's the key.
Right.
To have the options and the features and also the ease of use.
Right.
The person that can do that is truly a designer.
Right. And Joel gives a really good example. He's used this many times. The famous Windows turn off your computer kind of button, where you click it and you have standby, hibernate, shut down. You know, there's like 15 different ways to turn off your computer. And Joel says, hey, this is a good way and an opportunity to practice simplicity design without removing these functionalities. What you do is you say, turn off computer or whatever, right? So you can either turn off your computer, or like when he says, you can even shut your lid to sleep. But what he says is, instead of giving them sleep, hibernate, and all this other jazz, basically say, okay, you click the power button, it sleeps your computer. If you haven't touched it for, say, 15 minutes, you know, it hibernates it. You know, and so you remove the sleep and hibernate. Now, I'm simplifying this a lot more than it really is. He explains it so much better than
right.
I can right now. But, you know, that kind of approach where you have a one button, but it does all five of those things.
Right.
You know, and that's invisible design. That's simplifying an invisible design. Versus simply taking away the features because they're in the way. That's not good design. That's simply subtraction. And while it can make the experience better, it doesn't make the product
better.
Yeah, it doesn't
make the product better.
From a functional view, yeah.
Right.
And it's proven capabilities,
as far as its capabilities, let's face it, more options and more, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, bells and whistles.
Right, it drives sales. That's the best way to produce sales, according to what Joel says. You know,
look at Photoshop and all the hidden bells and whistles. Now, and they're getting, and from a usability standpoint,
we're getting into a sticky subject now. So
yeah.
Photoshop,
they're getting there. They're
right.
getting there, but there are a lot of hidden gems in Photoshop.
Right.
How to make those gems not so hidden? That's the brilliance behind, you know, simple. Or behind invisible design. So.
Right. Okay. So next up, we have The Web is Dead by Wired. That's kind of going to be a kind of interesting little topic to talk about. So what do you think? Is the web dead?
Kevin, is the web truly dead?
Yeah, I think...
why don't you tell us about the article?
I'm pretty sure that the Web Weekly is going to crash and burn. Because the web's dying.
That's right.
Think about it.
People
aren't listening to it on the web. They're listening to it on their MP3 players and
right.
all these other devices.
So why don't, give us a rundown.
We shouldn't even call this the web is... or we shouldn't have called this the Web Weekly. We should have called it something like App Weekly.
The Internet Weekly.
Internet Weekly. Yeah, there you go.
App Weekly. Maybe that might be a good podcast, actually.
Yeah, App Weekly would be a good podcast. I don't know. The Internet Weekly, we may need to change the name now. You know, why are you saying that the Internet the web is dead? Because we're not viewing things through a browser anymore. We're not using HTTP requests. We're not viewing HTML.
What article are you referring to?
Well, this is a Wired article.
Uh-huh. So our listeners understand.
Right. So you can find it at wired.com/magazine/2010/08/FF_web_ripped.
For our one user.
Right.
For our one listener.
You know, I know there's actually about three people now that listen to this.
Wow. Three listeners.
You,
awesome.
Me, and
hey.
That other person.
Hey, three listeners, we are here. For you.
That's right. All right.
So the web is dead.
Do you listen to the podcast at all?
I've listened.
Do you listen to our old ones?
I've listened to it on our headphones. So you know how when you listen to your own voice, you come very, very close to barfing. You know,
think your voice is a lot squeakier. Scruffier. You're
nasal. See, with me, it's the whole nasal thing. That's what
But
tell us about the article.
The
web is dead.
So the article, basically, this guy goes to talk about Michael Wolff, or by Chris Anderson and Michael Wolff, mind you. They go in to talk about, basically, that, you know, we're using our iPads, we're using Xbox to watch videos, we're using all these other devices, but our computer and the browser to view content and to digest stuff. And it's a slightly valid point, but I don't actually think the common day person is going to be using an iPad, an Xbox, and their iPhone, and all these other devices like super high-tech stuff to do this. To me, it feels very novelistic,
right.
What he's saying, like Minority Report, that movie way a long time ago, where there's these ideas of what things are going to be,
which is a great
like movie. The flying car. You know, I think that's what this kind of article is aiming at. It's kind of shooting towards a proprietary, non-open kind of thing. And
to be honest, these
devices are accessing web content. I mean, let's be honest here.
Yeah, well, what he's saying is, you know, the web is HTML pages that are hyperlinked together that you use to browse on a browser.
Right.
You know, he goes, and what he's doing when he wakes up, the first thing he does is pick up his iPad and he, you know, does whatever he does. He opens up an app and he checks the weather. And then, you know, he'll open up another app and, you know, use geolocation to see where his girlfriend is. And then he'll open up another app and use Facebook.
Yeah, and email and all these other things.
On an app. None of which were an actual web page.
Right.
You know, so what he's saying is...
In API, this is all using like APIs. So APIs has changed the way we use information.
Yeah, I think this article is just a matter of semantics. He's saying, you know, it's actually not the web, it's the internet. You know, and it's just like, well, come on, man. You know,
I think this was simply to drive hype and get excitement around the article and to get coverage like they're getting right now. That's what this article feels like. It feels like,
right.
hey, you know, it's like people who have radical views and that kind of thing. It's like you're not being realistic, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think
maybe we may be wrong. I mean, but I certainly don't see in the near future this kind of thing taking off. I mean, I read another article that countered this one.
I mean, there's nothing really to be taking off. I mean, he's just stating a point that, you know, the web is dying. We're not using HTML pages or browsers, you know, to get around. And for a lot of, I think the point that he's trying to make is, you know, we have all these other devices now that we're using to access the internet and not necessarily a web browser from a computer. I'm in front of the computer all day long, and I use a web browser, and so does my wife. And so
I mean, that's what I was going to say, that probably the most used app on the iPhone and the iPad is the Safari browser. I mean, really. That's what people, like, when you
probably
really
the
read
iPad
the new
more than the iPhone.
Yeah.
I mean, how often do you use your browser on your
iPhone? All the time. Anytime I click on a link, like, say, inside Twitter or any of these other applications, it takes me to Safari.
Okay, so you're...
Yeah, and so while I'm using this app, it corresponds to it. They send me back to the browser to view these HTML pages. So, you know, to me, this is... just one of those articles that's just being thrown out there. And
well, cool. Well, go. We'll put a link to it on our show notes.
Right.
And you can draw your own biased conclusions.
That's right. Yeah.
To the article. So.
So yeah. Man, that was shorter than I thought. I thought we were going to go on forever about this web is dead thing.
Well, 45 minutes, you know, I thought for a while that you weren't going to breathe. You were going so fast, man.
Well, there's a lot to cut. I went through 900 stinking articles.
Yeah, Kevin toyed around with his Google Reader.
Yeah, I hadn't used it in a while.
Last week, so he came here with a slew of topics that I didn't really read, and I'm feeling like I'm about to... fall asleep right at my seat, you know, like I've knocked out.
When we cover like 11 things, I think I just counted a week.
Yeah.
Like 11.
That's all a result of Kevin's.
I put you through your paces.
Google reading.
You know, we said we were going to do this podcast like 30 to 45 minutes, and the last two we've been kind of. So, if longer is better, let us know. Or I think we're just going to go with the flow. I say we just go with the flow, do whatever.
Yeah, we'll pick three or four topics next week, and we'll roll with that.
Yeah.
But hey, where can everybody find you?
Oh, you can find me at Kevin Dees on Twitter or at IntelDesigner.com. That's my blog.
You can find my Twitter at Jive, J-I-V-E. My website is 01productions.com. It's a shameless plug if you need a website or what have you. Kevin and I are the guys.
Right.
So, and we're looking forward to talking to you next week.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. See y'all later.